18th from 3 to 5 p.m. right here on WBAI New York.
And it's 12 noon in New York City at 99.5 FM, WBAI, WBAI.org on the web. Coming up next, the Gary Null Show.
Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We're going to have an empowering hour. There's a new herbal remedy that's been used in Thailand to beat mild COVID. 90% success rate in a study of 11,800 prison inmates from the Thailand Department of Thai Traditional and Alternative Medicine. That's important because Thailand was hit hard with the Delta variant surge, and vaccination experienced a low start as the manufacturer granted the license to produce the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, had no real experience in vaccine production. Now, reports indicate that a cheap herbal medicine might just be working to treat SARS-2. So that's just one of many studies we're going to present today, none of which you will find in the mainstream media, but all from the peer-reviewed literature. Then I'm going to address something that just occurred this morning, so I decided to write a little commentary about an hour ago. They went after one of the people we had on this program, a Dr. Cole. And Dr. Cole is a mainstream, pro-vaccine, orthodox, multi-board certifications. And he just found that there were too many inconsistencies in the official narrative. So like tens of thousands of physicians and scientists, all orthodox, all pro-vaccine, they started to talk truth to the power of Anthony Fauci. Boy, they came hard at him, and now they're wanting to take away his medical license. So I'd appreciate it if someone in the audience, maybe one of the citizen journalists, take a copy of what I'm about to say and post and send it to Dr. Cole, because the information I have can directly contradict every claim made by the state medical board. And while I'm at it, I'm going to take on all 50 states' medical boards today. They're corrupt, they're political, they're weaponized, and they're in the pocket, just like the FDA, of the AMA. And so I'm going to take on the AMA today. I'm one of the few people in America to take on the AMA and win. And I still have the letter from the chairman of the board of the AMA, as he insisted I not put stuff in an article, and I put it in the article. And I said, if I'm wrong, sue me. But there was nothing wrong. It's just that they're not used to having, the bully's not used to getting pushback. What we have now in our power, probably the only thing we have right now in our power, is the opportunity to say no to anything that they're suggesting is what's good for us, because it isn't. So that gets me to another part of what we're going to do today. I'm going to share a short, it's not that long, about 12 minutes, a Pfizer scientist of 17 years, a scientist for 40 years, a person that actually accepted all the awards for decades for being one of the best scientists in the world in developing vaccines and drugs. But he just couldn't hold his tongue when he saw the distortions and misinformation coming out. So he spoke out. They're now trying to censor him. And on the social media, they have an attacking. He doesn't care. He's swinging. Good for him. So then I want to blend a little philosophy with today's show, a little Buddhist philosophy. Not that I'm suggesting Buddhism, but I look at the benefits we can learn from all spiritual or philosophical or religious beliefs. There's truths of some type in all. So Alan Watts today, are you tired of playing the social game? This is 40 years old. It's as current as what's going on today with the woke generation. But let's go deeper. Let's use some brain cells today. Professor Matthias Desmet, is the Corona narrative part of a totalitarian mass hypnosis? Put your thinking cap on for him. He is one heavyweight. Really important information. And also from people that I have a lot of respect for, and that is the Rutherford Institute and it's John Whitehead, in my opinion, right there with Danny Sheehan as one of the best constitutional lawyers in America, and Nisha Whitehead on the nanny state. So we have a lot to do. Let's get started. And then later on, you'll have an opportunity to call in and share your points of view. So needless to say, we should, as a society, a world society, we should be open to anything that can be proven with quality studies to have merit. The ultimate outcome should not be dictated by pharmaceutical interests who have profit as their motive. It should be, what does the good science say? And they're showing this in Thailand right now because their Department of Traditional Alternative Medicine is using a particular herbal remedy. It's very inexpensive, and it seems to be working. A couple of months ago, Thailand's National Cabinet actually approved green chireta, C-H-I-R-E-T-T-A. Again, C-H-I-R-E-T-T-A, chireta, for use in people with asymptomatic or mild COVID-19 infections following a successful study in the prison system. Most of the nation's jails now use the herbal remedy with a remarkable track record. Get this, 90% that took the drug got better. These are better results than even ivermectin, and certainly a lot better. Anything is better than remdesivir, which can actually kill you. But that's Anthony Fauci's pet drug. Someday, hopefully, one of the citizen journalists in this audience will go to the actual data and look at how many patients initially, at the beginning of COVID, when there was no other medicine given, it was insisted by Anthony Fauci on his two recommendations, this be given. So that's what they got. They got this, and they might have gotten some steroids. It depends upon how much leeway the pulmonologist had, because that will bring down inflammation. Or they got the respirator. In any case, it's worth this discussion. So the drug is not a silver bullet. We should look at all of these as simply pieces to a puzzle. The more pieces we have, the fit, the healthier the person will be, and the greater their outcome is likely to happen. But hey, we have a lot of people who are asymptomatic or have mild infection, and this could help them as well. And there's now a rush to produce more of this green chireta in the prisons and across 24,000 villages, while the Thai government continues to monitor clinical trials. So that's good. All right? They're doing it the right way. They're open-minded, and they should be. By the way, you find open-mindedness all over the world. Not so much here, but elsewhere, yes. And so I'll keep you abreast of this in case we can continue to see positive treatment. And by the way, they've historically used this to treat bacterial infections and select diseases. Now, we have a lot of people in this audience who suffer from joint infection. And there's a lot of easy protocols. First and foremost, what's causing the inflammation? You may be allergic to something. I'm going to do another clinical study. This one you can do from home. And it'll be in about a month. Or 2 months. I'm going to try to get back to New York to premiere a brand new documentary, The Corruption of Science. And at the same time, I'll be going to Woodstock and out to Huntington Arts when they finish the renovation and do it there as well. More on this. This is the hardest hitting documentary I've ever done. I do a lot of hard hitting documentaries. In any case, when I'm talking with people at these showings, they always ask me about questions. And one of the questions that's common is, what do I do because I have aching joints? Now, it might be in the feet, the knees, the elbows, the shoulders, the neck. And so you try to understand what is the underlying cause. And it's hard for people to understand that you may be taking too much of something, too little of something. So I do what is called a Coco pulse test, based upon the man who invented this system, Dr. Coco. And what it is, you take a single item of food or beverage in the morning without getting out of bed. So if you have someone living with you, have them bring that item. If you don't, and it doesn't spoil, just put it in the a cup or a plate and keep it beside your bed, because you can't get out of bed. If you get out of bed, immediately that changes your pulse rate. So you wake up and you take your pulse for 60 seconds. Then you take, you write it down, let's say it's 70 beats per minute. And then you take a single piece, it can be as small as a teaspoon, and you put it in your mouth. You don't even have to swallow it. And you leave it in your mouth for about 30 seconds, because there are receptors underneath your tongue that are signaling the positive or negative electrical charges of whatever you're taking into the body's immune system. Now, then you can spit it out or swallow it. And you stay in bed and don't move. Just stay there for 20 minutes. In 20 minutes, you take your pulse again. So you have a before and after. If your pulse has been raised more than 5 beats, let's say it went to 75, where when you started, before you started with 70, then there is a very good possibility that you're allergic to that. So what you do is you write on a pad what your pulse was before and after, and then you try maybe 5 or 6 different things over the next 5 or 6 days. Then come back to that one and see if it remains the same. It's when you get a consistent readout of 5 times that, aha, that's something I didn't know I was allergic to. Now, are you allergic to it? And the amount you're consuming, would you be allergic if you had less of it? And then you go on what is called a 5-day rotational diet, meaning you won't have that same item in your diet for 5 days. So let's just say that you were allergic to sweet potatoes. So you would have a small amount of sweet potatoes on Monday, but no more until Saturday. The trouble is, we tend to eat the same foods every day, and therefore we can develop an allergic reaction, and the allergies can manifest in the body in a lot of different ways. Defect in our immune system, fatigue, brain fog, all kinds of pain. And I remember when we had, oh my goodness, probably 5,000 people over a 3-month period, seven nights a week where we're doing these. We'd have 2 to 3 groups a night, starting at 5 o'clock till 7, 7 till 9, the 9 to 11. It wore us all out, but we got a lot of people healthy. And it was women's health issues. And one of the things we did is, with this very test I just told you, we ask women if you've had menstrual irregularities, dysmenorrhea, amenorrhea, painful periods. And when some of the women tell you that their period is so painful, they can't get out of bed. They got cramps and they feel nauseous, etc. So then the first thing is the test. It is called an elimination program. So you want to eliminate from the body that which is triggering this. Now, mind you, it's not just one item that we frequently have triggering. We might have 4 or 5 things in the diet that cause this triggering. And you can always tell. Here are some telltale signs. When you wake up in the morning, are your eyes puffy underneath the eyes? 2, do you have mucus? Do you go clearing your throat all morning? 3, do you have a little mucus at the corner of the eyes? And so when you wash your face, very, very gently, just kind of wash underneath where the eyelids are, and does it feel sticky or slippery? That's mucus. All right. Also, How's your breath smell? Is it foul? Do you have a morning bad breath? You shouldn't, because that tells me about the bacteria in your mouth and in your stomach and in your intestine. So a lot of this has to do with foods that we and beverages we shouldn't be consuming. So the first part is a part of an elimination program where you're eliminating things that are triggering these reactions in the body. That's step one. Then the second step is to reinforce a healthier immune system, and then you start to rebuild. So if you were taking in pizzas, which have meat that is almost always bad for you and causes pain because it's got a lot of arachidonic acid, which will cause inflammation in the joints. It's got gluten, which is the protein within the starch, and that can cause pain and high inflammation. And it's been browned, and that causes acrylamides and heterocyclic amines, both of which cause inflammation. So just eating a piece of pizza, you're really putting a lot of inflammation in your stomach, your gut, and in your bloodstream. These cytokines are going everywhere. So we want to stop the problem, turn off the flame, and then let's heal the body. So that's how it's done. So today I'm going just to offer one piece of a puzzle for those of you who have joint infections. And this is berberine. B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E. Berberine. B-E-R-B-E-R-I-N-E. It's a natural anti-staphylococcal agent, and it can be used to treat joint infections. Now, Staphylococcus aureus is one of the primary pathogens responsible for a prosthetic joint infection, and this is a huge problem. If certain strains of the Staphylococcus aureus are resistant to conventional antibacterial treatments, and so this makes a big difference. This was done at Shanghai Tong University, and they tested berberine in vitro to determine whether it can be used to treat Staphylococcus aureus, and the results of their study were published in the British Medical Journals, Complementary and Alternative Medicine. And by the way, berberine is an alkaloid that can be extracted from various plants, like traditional Chinese medicinal herb, huanglian, L-I-A-N. And it's been used in Chinese medicine for decades as an over-the-counter medicine to treat diarrhea and bowel disorders. Anyhow, it works. It has antiviral, anti-tumor, antifungal, and antibacterial qualities to it. So it just should be in everyone's home medicine kit, especially since you want something that's antimicrobial. And it works against MRSA, methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus. So just one more piece to the puzzle to help you with things that happen. And also, we should be far more conscious that the items we buy, are they biodegradable or not? And if they're not, shouldn't we be really diligent at making sure that they're recyclable, at least to the degree they are? And common chemicals in electronics and baby products harm our brain development. This is from North Carolina State University. So simply stated, chemicals increasingly used as flame retardants and plasticizers pose a larger risk to children's brain development than previously thought, according to this published article in Environmental Health Perspectives. And we're looking at dozens of studies, cell-based studies, and concluding that exposure to even low levels of these chemicals called organophosphate esters can harm your IQ, attention, memory in children in ways not yet looked at by regulators. They're neurotoxic. All of these are. And these have been historically used as nerve agent and pesticides. And they're neurotoxic. So let's just try as much as possible to purchase things that are more natural. When you're decorating your home, get rid of particle wood that's frequently in the cheap floors that people put in. Aesthetically, it's going to be nicer, but as far as natural, put in. I'm not suggesting hardwood floors at this time, because the destruction of hardwood floors but you can certainly put in tiles that are marble tiles, clay tiles. But do the right thing as far as getting the chemicals out of the products that are in your home. All right? Because you're breathing them in, and a lot of car seats, baby products, they all have these flame retardants in it. The furniture, same thing. So just go out of your way. And one place to buy furniture, by the way, is these repurposed stores. They're called consignment stores. And you can find magnificent furniture that was really well made for 10 to 15 cents on the dollar frequently. I know, I bought a lot of stuff at them. Save a lot of money. At least you know what you're getting. It's made of quality. Because I don't want something that's new that's got organic phosphate esters in it. Just a thought. Also, a study identifies a link between certain lifestyle activities and reduced cognitive decline. This is from the Simon Fraser University, a highly respected university up in Canada. And a new study by researchers from the Digital Health Circle, which is an innovation hub affiliated with Simon Fraser University, has determined that there is a causal relationship between participating in certain lifestyle activities and preventing the decline of your cognition, in effect protecting cognitive health. That's a key to staying healthy and for deterring illnesses like dementia or Alzheimer's. Now, a friend of mine, I'm talking about a longtime friend from the time I came to the city, New York City, and I just saw an article in the paper about him, how he's under conservatorship, and I don't even know if I'd be allowed to see him now. When I go back to New York, I'll certainly try. Great artist, one of America's greatest pop artists, in my opinion, better than Andy Warhol, but also just an extraordinary. On 83rd Street for 27 years, down on 72nd Street, 15 years. And we'd have these chats, then decide we were going to have dinner that night and just talk about the world and life and people that we appreciate. Always talked about people that he was inspired by. But now I see him, and I remember when the first time came, it was 10 years ago when I started seeing is short-term memory, forgetting. And that's how it happens, short-term memory. You can remember something that happened 50 years ago with clarity, but what did you eat this morning for breakfast? I forgot. That's what short-term memory. So it's not normal. That's when you got to get ahead of it, and you got to get on a anti-dementia and brain-enhancing protocol. And he was, but then his world, being busy, traveling, touring, and he didn't stop to take care of himself. Now he's pretty advanced, which is unfortunate. Could it be reversed? Yes, but they're not going to allow him. I already asked 5 years ago, 2 years ago. I asked, could I take care of him for a month? I said, if you don't see a complete change in him within a month, fine, then my protocol didn't work. But I know it'll work. They didn't want to, his family didn't want that, which is unfortunate. By the way, on my progressive commentary last night, Dr. Rose made an interesting statement. Now, mind you, she's a pro-vaccine top scientist. You know, she's an immunologist and a molecular biologist, and she loves statistics, and she does all this very nerdy work. She calls herself, you know, the ultimate scientific nerd. Everything is in the numbers and figures. She's non-political. And I never ask a scientist, what's your politics, what's your religious belief? That's none of my business, first of all. And I'm not there to talk about the religion and or their body politic. I'm there to see, what do you have to say? And here's what she had to say. She was telling a story. Those of you who heard this show last night, you heard her. She said that a very close friend of hers started to have problems, had COVID, and his family said, get into the hospital. They took him in the hospital, and they didn't do anything. And he got worse. And then they wanted to put him on a respirator. And he was having trouble breathing. And he had heard about other people on the respirator who died. Very few people survived. Remember all those deaths in hospitals, respirator? It was the only thing you heard about. Oh, get them. Don't do anything till they're needed to be in a respirator, then get them to the hospital. And she said that he told the doctor, I don't want to go on a respirator. And they were insisting he goes on. And he said, I'm going to go home. If I'm going to die, I'm going to die with my family at home. Okay. I think he was 80. So he went home. And there, they put him on a different protocol. I believe he had ivermectin. And he survived. He's totally healthy now. What do you think the outcome would have been for an 80-year-old who couldn't breathe on a respirator in a hospital? There's a time in life when you use your best informed knowledge and you say yes or no. And we have to live with the results of making the right choice. But do your homework, people. Because she said, now listen carefully, there's a new report out with her and two other scientists, three of them. Here's what she said. 90 to 95% of all people being hospitalized now had both vaccines. Okay, if the vaccine was to prevent you from getting COVID, that didn't work in Israel. This is in Israel. And guess how many deaths or injuries they have in Israel because of taking the vaccine? No one knows. What do you mean? There's no registry. There's no reporting system. No one knows. And I said, how could you hold a whole nation to an account with mandatory vaccines and no one noticed, even wanted to know, how well are we doing? Are we succeeding, failing? Clearly the vaccine failed because 90 to 95% of all people going to hospital and dying in a hospital were fully vaccinated. Yes. So she said, but we're still, as in America, your FDA and CDC are lying to you. Here's the actual numbers, and evidently they spent months coming up with the actual Veris data. They looked at all. There's another site at the CDC that no, and FDA that no one ever sees that has different numbers and also Medicare numbers. How many people, she said, died in America thus far? 202,000. How many seriously injured? I mean, life-threatening injury, and many of those will die. Over 186,000. How many are permanently disabled? Like there was one nurse that got the vaccine and then she had double amputation because of gangrene from this. I think she said 180,000. It's all in the report. Wow. I did the numbers quickly and I said, well, that means over 680,000 Americans have had serious adverse effects. And how many studies, how many interviews have they had in any of the mainstream media about the side effects or deaths? She said, none. Nobody touches it. Nobody wants to look at the consequences. They only want to look at get vaccinated. So do your homework. Whether you vaccinate or not is your business. But have an information so you can make an intelligent choice. I will support you either way. All right? In any case, in this particular study, it's all about aging. And it's about what we should do with protecting our cognition. And a lot of people just don't realize that their lifestyle may not be as healthy as they believe it is and could be causing inflammation in the brain. And a standard American diet is definitely pro-inflammatory, the brain and the heart and your arteries and your liver and your kidneys. And Professor Marino showed that the brain's ability to change and adapt itself over a lifespan is very, and they did this with this SFU computing science, and they found that a healthier lifestyle, healthier attitude, healthier cognition, less dementia. All right, so bring challenge into your life. Learn a new word. Learn writing skills. Learn a new language. Learn a musical instrument. Don't stop challenging yourself. Once you get comfortable, you become complacent and your life becomes a ritualized routine of the same thing over and over again. Change your diet. Make it more interesting. Make it more exciting. Try to use different herbs and seasonings. So that enrichment, enriching your environment, is what prevents cognition. Sitting around watching television or on the internet, that increases inflammation. And finally, from Warren Alpert School of Medicine at Brown University, guess what? Tai Chi, T-A-I-C-H-I, it holds promise as a cardiac rehab exercise. The slow and gentle movement of Tai Chi is a natural alternative exercise option for patients who decline traditional cardiac rehabilitation. This was published in the Journal of the American Heart Association, open access journal, so good for them. That's the latest on health and healing. And by the way, living near a forest keeps your brain's amygdala healthier. Max Planck Institute of Human Development, one of the finest research institutes in the world. And they investigated the relationship between the availability of nature near city dwellers' homes and their brain health. And the findings are relevant for urban planners. So we should start planning anything in the future as far as where we're going to live, live around forest, urban green, wasteland. And all this has stress-increasing or stress-reducing properties. Living in a city, living in the suburbs, that's not good. Living where you really have green and nature, water, ponds, lakes, rivers, ocean, that's really good for the amygdala, A-M-Y-G-D-A-L-A. So that creates part of the brain plasticity that supports the assumption that the environment can shape brain structure and function, and it does. We are 31 minutes into the program. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome you from all over the world listening right now. I'm Gary Nall. I'm going to take on the defense of an Idaho board-certified, regular, mainstream, pro-vaccine, pro-orthodox physician and scientist. This just came in this morning, and it's the Iowa Medical Association files a complaint against controversial doctor. And this was brought on Boise State Public Radio this morning. Quote, a major Idaho Doctors Association has filed a complaint against a Treasury Valley physician who has repeated misinformation about COVID-19 and vaccines. The Idaho Medical Association filed a complaint against Dr. Ryan Cole over his claim that he prescribed ivermectin for COVID-19 patients. Ivermectin has not been proven to effectively treat COVID-19, and doctors say it could be harmful. The Idaho Medical Association CEO, Susie Keller, says while the association is disturbed by Dr. Cole's spreading of misinformation, including dissuading people from getting the COVID-19 vaccine, the complaint is narrowly focused on the claim Dr. Cole prescribed an unproven drug. Quote, we believe that he has violated sections of the Idaho Medical Practice Act by providing care that fails to meet the community standard of care by promoting the sale of drugs that are not medically indicated and by engaging in conduct that constitutes an abuse or exploitation of a patient arising out of the trust and confidence placed in a physician by a patient, end quote. Okay, so there's no proof, there's no studies that ivermectin works. It is a quack therapy, clearly. Why? Because the New York Times and the Lancet and all these other publications have been against New England Journal of Medicine, against it, the Journal of the American Medical Association, against it. So surely he should be punished. And thinking he could help a patient is just delusional. Therefore, maybe he is mentally incompetent and shouldn't be practicing medicine at all. Okay, fair enough. But now I'm going to respond to it. First off, all of these state medical boards, in my opinion, are nothing more than very biased and politically motivated and frequently, in this case, weaponized to protect the status quo, to protect what we've been told without the ability to challenge when it comes to the drugs being used. Now, I could understand if this was years ago and someone suggested a vitamin C drip might help someone. Well, of course, that never helped anybody, but it does. And the science is filled with the literature. But in his case, it starts with the AMA. Remember, everything that does, it goes on at the State Medical Board, and including all the accreditation of all the hospitals, all that's through the AMA. It's had power over the entire medical paradigm for over 100 years. The AMA's membership has been gradually declining over the years due to its betrayal of medical ethics and having been captured by commercial pharmaceutical interest. Only 12% of practicing physicians hold membership with the AMA. More interested in politics than medicine and to establish a medical monopoly. It is basically a greed-motivated trade union that tries to eliminate competitors, which have included chiropractic, naturopathy, and virtually every form of alternative medical systems. In 2005, hoping to improve its image and boost sagging membership, the AMA launched a $60 million marketing campaign. It included heartstring-tugging ads portraying doctors as everyday heroes. The ads ran on national television, radio, and magazines. I'm sure many of you saw them. According to the AMA marketing executive, the ads emphasize, quote, nobility of the profession. Good. Hey, there are a lot of doctors saving lives, and I support them. Emergency medicine in America is the best in the world. So if you have an accident, a heart attack, a stroke, if you've been in a trauma, a car wreck, if you've got a tooth knocked out, if you need brain surgery, all of these thousands of different applications for emergency medicine, we're the best in the world. Everything else, we're about the worst in the world in developed nations. How much of our medicine is actually in that vein of emergency medicine, critical care? About anywhere from 10 to 12%, which means that anywhere from 90 to 88% of medicine isn't working. So when you're told to take chemotherapy, but you're not told your oncologist could make big profits, we're talking about thousands, thousands of dollars per injection of chemotherapy because they're buying and can buy the drug at wholesale, sell it to you, get your insurance or co-payers to cover that, or you pay for it. And you have, let's say, 100 patients, you could be bringing in an extra $1 to $2 million a year. And the patient dies. 550,000 patients will die this year and every year. So let's just go back. Let's just do the math. Let's just say, on average, let's bring it down. Let's say 500,000 people are dying every year from cancer. So let's go back the last 30 years. So in the last 30 years, 15 million Americans died using only orthodox therapy. Only orthodox. So wouldn't you think at some point someone would say, maybe we should examine the protocols? You can't. You can't change the protocols because Big Pharma controls the protocols. And Big Pharma controls the journals that publish glowing articles. And Big Pharma controls the PR firms that then promote ghostwritten articles about these same drugs or medical procedures. I see. So to the AMA, are these still all noble professionals? If you're rewarded and praised and profit from people dying repeatedly into the millions, is that a good thing or not? In the early half of the 20th century, petrochemical giants organized a coup on the medical research facilities, hospitals, and universities. Although started in 1847, what the AMA has now become can be traced back to the Carnegie-Flexner strategy and Rockefeller family-sponsored research and donations to universities and medical schools. They simply bought power in the schools by funding drug-based research. The Rockefellers and Carnegies were the two people at the head of this. They controlled everything, total monopoly. This set the path for what today is Big Pharma's domination of the medical narrative on health prevention, treatment, and diagnostics of disease. In 1848, everything was built upon two propositions. All doctors should receive a suitable education, and there should be a uniform standard adopted by all medical schools. Secret files were obtained from the AMA's Chicago Department of Investigation and were given to me. So this is something I'm acutely familiar with because I was the one to write an article in Caveat Emptor. Ralph Nader and I were writing articles in the same issue way back at the beginning of the 1970s. And I exposed the AMA's dirty Department of Investigation in the basement of the AMA. They'd been there for 25 years at least, and they had a whole campaign to stop chiropractors from getting insurance coverage, from having their respect. It was considered an unscientific cult, and every doctor in America was told you cannot receive a patient from a chiropractor or refer a patient to a chiropractor. If you're a chiropractor, you cannot use a hospital for x-rays because you're an unscientific cultist. So then they said it's a mental health quackery. That was the AMA. And the state medical boards then looked at any doctor that used any practice that was not considered current accepted medical practice. I remember when a woman, Mrs. Privatera, came into my studio I think it was 1975. And I didn't know who she was. And she said, would I help her husband, James Privatera? Why? He's working on a chain gang as a prisoner in Southern California. What was his crime? He helped treat cancer patients successfully, over 270. Not a person was hurt. Everyone benefited. But the state of California, corrupt then as it is now, the state medical board, same kind of medical boards, went after him. In fact, the jury was even instructed that it didn't matter if he cured every patient. The charges was, did you use current medical standards, meaning did you use chemotherapy, radiation, and surgery? If you used anything else, you were engaged in a fraud. The jury said they didn't want to convict him, but that was the charge. He acknowledged he didn't use chemotherapy, surgery, and radiation, so he was found guilty. Well, we started a whole campaign, and eventually we got him out of that situation. But every doctor in America, every single doctor using any form of alternative therapy was attacked by their state medical boards. But in the end, earlier they attacked Royal Rife, R-I-F-E, because he had success with his cancer treatment. And in the 1950s and 60s, the AMA had its Committee on Quackery, which included alliance with the American Cancer Society and the American Pharmaceutical Association and Arthritis Foundation and the Council of Better Business Bureaus and the FDA, the FTC, the IRS, and Postal Service, the Attorney Generals in all 50 states. So if they wanted to nail you, you were nailed. They also created blacklists, McCarthy lists of doctors using any, quote, questionable treatments that were sent to Blue Cross, Blue Shield, Medicare, Aetna, and the Health Association of America, so you wouldn't get covered. And under a really, really creepy person, Morris Fishbein, the AMA campaigned to assure only allopathic medicine, only drug promotion was taught in medical schools. In the early 1990s, the AMA attacked vegetarian diets, and the Nutrition Advocacy Group, Physicians Committee for Responsible Nutrition, was founded by Dr. Neil Barnard. And among the cases against the AMA's attacks against alternative medicine was the federal suit Wilk versus the AMA. And my article is what led to the Wilk, because I'm the one who exposed all this. I don't say that to brag. I'm just giving a line of how did Wilk and all the other chiropractors, the four other chiropractors, sue the AMA and the 12 largest medical organizations. The AMA lost the case. It freed chiropractic, which was dead. It would have been over, as in the entire profession, gone forever, because they couldn't make any money. And then it became real and legitimate. And that was a breakthrough. So what we've got today is we've got all of this state medical boards now going after any doctor using ivermectin. Okay. So to that issue, we should just share the following. And again, please, someone in the audience, get this information to him, because we've done the homework. All the documentation is completely from peer-reviewed journals. And here it is. So to the proponents of quackery on the State Medical Board of Idaho, you're saying that there is no proof. Mm-hmm. You're saying the FDA has no proof. Well, here's what we found, and you should take a look at it. And if we can find this, and we can go through this in detail, so too could you. The actual cases of ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, vitamin D, vitamin C, quercetin, zinc, and it's this simple. There are 344 studies on hydroxychloroquine, which he also used. 250 of them are in the Library of Medicine, PubMed. They're peer-reviewed. They've been conducted specifically on COVID-19 with phenomenal benefit. How beneficial? Well, 281 have been clinical trials. So that's not unproven. 4,583 scientists participated in those trials. 407,627 patients. 64% improvement in 31 elderly treatment trials, early treatment trials. 75% improvement in 13 early stage infection treatment mortality results. 21% improvement in 190 late stage infection treatment trials, meaning patients with serious conditions. Oh, and by the way, State Medical Board, do you have any treatment, does any doctor in any hospital, any institution, any of the real quacks in America, do any of you have a 21% improvement in late stage? No, you do not. Your patients die. All right? But hey, this one drug has 21% improvement, 23% improvement in 44 randomized controlled trials. How about ivermectin? What they're really bringing him up on charges. You say there's no evidence. You say there's no proof. Well, wow. Did you get a degree in functional illiteracy? Do you get to graduate and get on with these medical boards by being consistently uninformed? Because we found 131 study, 52 of which were on PubMed, the Library of Medicine, peer-reviewed. They've been conducted specifically for COVID-19. 63 have been clinical trials. The standard you have a clinical trial. Well, you got 63 clinical trials. How many of you read that involved 613 scientists and 26,398 patients? How important was it? You say zero, unproven, and the studies show 58% improvement in 31 randomized controlled trials, 86% improvement in 14 prophylaxis trials. Your prophylaxis is what? Put a condom over your head and a stethoscope around your neck and try to find a heart pulse on a dead body? I would call you the zombie board of Iowa, because something is wrong there. There might be a brain in that skull, but man, nothing's happening. Because if we found 86% improvement in 14 prophylaxis trials, that means that what he is offering is saving lives by preventing them, and he has an abundance, an overwhelming amount of studies on his side. You have zero on your side. But you have power, don't you? You have the media all in your pocket. 72% improvement in 27 early-stage infection treatment trials, 40% improvement in 22 late-stage infection treatment trials, and get this, 58% improvement in 25 separate mortality results, meaning the people who took ivermectin at the end stage were far less likely to die by 58%. Than what they would do in the state of Iowa now by what? Giving him a drug by Anthony Fauci that is known to have a 25% mortality rate? But it's approved. Also, it's not all. Have you looked at fluoxamine? 88% improvement in early treatment, 29% improvement in late stage treatment, 63% improvement in all 7 peer-reviewed studies. Vitamin D, 101 studies. Conducted by over 875 scientists, 63% sufficiency studies with 34,863 patients, 33 treatment trials with 46,860 patients, 42% improvement in 33 treatment trials, 56% improvement in 68 sufficiency studies, 55% improvement in 19 treatment mortality results, and, well, I could go on. We have a lot of studies on vitamin D. Are you advocating vitamin D to all the citizens in your state through the doctors association that you run to help prevent them from getting severe infection by keeping their immune system strong? I doubt it. In contrast, there have been 21 studies enrolling 35,744 patients in remdesivir, the one drug you would advocate for, but it only showed a 22% improvement in all studies combined. Whoa, that's not very good. How bad is that? Well, we found five studies at 24% improvement. Melatonin had 62% improvement. Curcumin had 71% improvement. Nigella sativa had, that's 84% improvement, black cumin seed oil. Quercetin, 76% improvement. Aspirin even had 37% improvement. So if all of the things that are in the peer-reviewed literature in PubMed, all of these are better than anything any of you doctors in Iowa have been using, except Dr. Cole. So the one man in the entire state who is actually breaking ranks and saving lives, you're trying to use him as a scapegoat? Shame on you clowns. But then again, we're a nation of shame right now. So pathetic. So share that information. Send it out to Dr. Cole. Give it to his lawyers before they charge him $500,000 to do the research we just did for free for you. And we post this. This is posted today on, along with my critique of the media and being complicit in all this, on GaryNoll.com. So that's that. We're going to open up the line for some calls. I was going to go some of these other videos. I'm going to wait till tomorrow. We're going to take a quick break and come back. And when we come back, I'm going to share some insights on the tyranny that we're all living under. Well, not all of us, because a lot of people are the tyrants. And for them, they're just having a great time. Just imagine being drugged from your house. You say, what'd I do? What'd I do? It's not important what you did. You don't have the right mind think. You're not politically correct. We're going to tie it to this poll, put a blindfold over you, and then we're going to say, people, anyone, are you angry today? You rageful today? Want to just take your anger out on someone? Take it out on those people. They can't fight back. We've held their hands. That's Wikipedia. On a gulag where you cannot correct any inaccuracy, but every clown in the world, every one of these anonymous people that have no background, no qualifications, they're allowed to attack you mercilessly. Try to correct their lies. You can't. Now go to Facebook, Google, Twitter. They're all the same. In my opinion, we should eliminate all of them. Close them all down. Give Mike Schmuckenberg and the rest of these dancing clowns, let them go sell apples on the street someplace. They might sell you a poison apple for all I know. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Who said this? Whether the mask is labeled fascism, democracy, or dictatorship of the proletariat, our great adversary remains the apparatus, the bureaucracy, the police, the military, not the one facing us across the frontier of the battle lines, which is not so much our enemy as our brother's enemy, but the one that calls itself our protector and makes us its slaves. No matter what the circumstances, the worst betrayal will always be to subordinate ourselves to this apparatus and to trample underfoot in its service all human values in ourselves and in others. Who said that? I'll give you a hint. It was a famous French philosopher. We labor today under the weight of countless tyrannies, large and small, carried out in the so-called name of the national good for an elite class of government and corporate officials who are largely insulated from the ill effects of their options and actions. We, the middle class, are not so fortunate. We find ourselves badgered, bullied, and browbeaten into bearing the brunt of their arrogance, paying the price for their greed, suffering the backlash for their militarism, agonizing as the result of their inaction, feigning ignorance about their backroom dealings, overlooking their incompetence, turning a blind eye to their misdeeds, cowering from their heavy-handed tactics and blindly hoping for change that never comes. The overt signs of the despotism exercised by the increasingly authoritarian regime that passes itself off as the United States government and its corporate partners in crime are all around us. COVID-19 lockdowns, the vaccinated mandates that strip Americans of their freedom of movement, bodily integrity, censorship, criminalizing, shadow banning, and the platforming of individuals who express ideas that are politically incorrect or unpopular, warrantless surveillance of Americans' movements and communications, SWAT team raids of Americans' homes, shooting of unarmed civilians by police, harsh punishments meted out to the school children in the name of zero tolerance, armed drones taking to the skies domestically, endless wars, out-of-control spending, militarized police, roadside strip searches, roving TSA sweeps, privatized prisons with profit incentive for jailing Americans, fusion centers that spy on, collect, and disseminate data on Americans' private transactions and militarized agencies with stockpiles of ammunition. That's just a small amount of the most appalling of these indiscretions. Yet as egregious as these incursions on our rights may be, it's the endless petty tyrannies, the heavy-handed, punitive-laden dictates inflicted by a self-righteous, big brother knows best bureaucracy on an overtaxed, overregulated, and underrepresented populace that illustrates so clearly the degree to which we, the people, are viewed as incapable of common sense, moral judgment, fairness, and intelligence, not to mention lacking a basic understanding of how to stay alive, raise a family, or be a part of a functioning community. It's hard to say whether we're dealing with a kleptocracy, meaning a government ruled by thieves, a catastocracy, a government run by unprincipled career politicians, corporations, and thieves, that panders to the worst vices in our nature and has little regard for the rights of American citizens.
From WPFW in Washington and WBAI in New York, I'm Sue Goodwin. Here are some headlines. The Biden administration announced Tuesday that it would end mass arrests of undocumented immigrants during enforcement operations at U.S. businesses. These worksite raids have long been criticized by immigration advocates for sparking fear among undocumented workers and discouraging them from reporting labor violations lest they face arrest and deportation. Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said in a memo that the Department of Homeland Security would instead prioritize targeting unscrupulous employers who exploit the vulnerability of undocumented workers by paying poorly, subjecting them to unsafe working conditions, and facilitating human trafficking. Former President Trump touted workplace raids as a centerpiece of his crackdown on undocumented immigration, and the shift in policy is expected to meet with forceful Republican pushback. Meanwhile, immigration advocacy groups welcomed Tuesday's announcement but called on Congress to enact permanent reform. The Supreme Court today is hearing arguments on whether the death sentence should be reinstated for Zaharzar Naev, who was convicted of carrying out the deadly Boston Marathon bombing. A federal jury in Massachusetts convicted Zaharzar, who was 19 at the time of the attack, on 30 counts and recommended the death penalty for six of them. The Biden administration is asking the justices to reverse what it called an appeals court's erroneous decision to vacate the death penalty. Lawyers for Zaharzar have argued that even if the High Court vacated the appeals court ruling and sent the case back for further review, issues with the jury and the evidence presented during his trial would again lead to the death sentence being vacated. The federal government is pushing for the death penalty for Zaharzar, even as President Biden's Justice Department takes action to halt federal executions. The House last night approved a bipartisan short-term deal to increase the nation's debt limit, ensuring the federal government can continue fully paying its bills and avert an unprecedented default for now. The bill increases the debt ceiling by $480 billion.